big milestone for Chrysler.
The automakers found private money to pay back Uncle Sam.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for checking out the midday update from Marketplace.org. It's Thursday, the 19th of May.
Coming up, Chrysler's future looks a bit brighter today.
Japan's future looks a bit dimmer. It's just fallen back into its third recession in a decade.
And Katie Couric wraps up her tenure at CBS tonight. What's the future of network news programs?
Those stories and more coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
This podcast is supported by Carbonite Pro Online Backup, the automatic backup solution designed for small businesses. Learn more at carbonitepro.com.
Chrysler today will reportedly announce it's gotten enough private financing to pay back Uncle Sam. The automaker took billions of dollars in loans from the U.S. and Canadian governments at the height of the financial crisis.
Now, those loans, coupled with investments from Italian carmaker Fiat, helped Chrysler out of bankruptcy. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports the loan payback could set the stage for Fiat to take a bigger role in the company.
Executives from Chrysler and Fiat have been on a dog and pony show, maybe we should call it a Jeep and Alfa Romeo show, for investors nationwide, hyping the company's new car designs and optimistic business plans. It seems to have paid off. Chrysler's reportedly raised $7.5 billion in new loans and bonds to retire its remaining debts to the U.S. and Canadian treasuries. Those loans had interest rates as high as 20%. Paying them off is a lift to the bottom line. It's also good PR, says Coventry University business professor David Bailey.
A government-owned company may not have gone down particularly well amongst some in the U.S. market, and they want to get out from under government control and reestablish themselves as a private company.
By year's end, Fiat will own a majority stake in Chrysler. They'll work on revamping Chrysler's truck-heavy product line, bringing in more European technology, and introducing more small, fuel-efficient vehicles. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Well, the president of the New York Federal Reserve said this morning that commodity prices are pushing inflation higher right now, but he expects that trend will reverse soon. He's speaking just a day after the Fed released the details of its latest meeting at which policymakers discussed an exit strategy. The Fed's $600 billion bond buying program ends next month. Diane Swonk is chief economist with Mesirow Financial. She joins us now from Chicago, as she does every Thursday. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, what did we learn about the Fed's plan from the minutes that were released yesterday?
Well, what we learned is the Fed plans a very gradual exit from its strategy to support the economy because the economy is still, the recovery is going on, but it's still pretty fragile. So the Fed plans to go very slowly. Eventually, it will raise rates, and then it will start selling off parts of its balance sheet. But all of this is in the context of being gradual.
And, you know, the economy has been recovering, albeit slowly, over the last several quarters. How vital is the Fed at this point to sort of propping up the U.S. economy?
Well, the reality is both the Fed and the federal government are no longer the stimulus they once were in terms of providing growth. The economy really needs to get on its own footing and move forward on its own now. The Fed isn't pulling the rug out from underneath us, but there's really not much more can do to juice up the economy, which means we'll continue to muddle along, but we're not going to see a surge in growth anytime soon.
Diane Swonk, chief economist with Mesirow Financial, thanks so much as always.
Thank you.
Well, the Board of California's pension fund says next year employees will have to put in more money toward their retirement because less money will come from the state, the cash-strapped state. Now, states around the country are grappling with big budget deficits and are increasingly looking to pension funds for cash. New York's governor reportedly wants to slash benefits for future state workers to save money.
For more on all this, let's bring in Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell. Good morning.
Hey, Jeremy.
So how much trouble are these pension funds actually in?
Some state and local governments are in real trouble. You look at Illinois, and boy, that unfunded pension liability is a disgrace. Mm. It is a crisis. But you take a step back, you look nationwide, you say, look, we have a long-term funding problem. We need to put more money into these pensions. It's not a crisis. It's a problem that needs to be dealt with.
And should the existing workers and retirees that work for states be concerned that the state will go after their benefits that they've already been promised?
Well, to the extent that the states can, they're going to. It's very hard to change promised benefits for existing workers. Now, in some states you can, and there's some very clever lawyers, very high-priced lawyers that have come up with ways to modify consumer price index adjustments and things like that. But new workers, they're going to get the brunt of the hit.
They're going to get the brunt of the hit. So what can be done to shore up the finances in the long run?
Well, in the long run, employees are going to contribute more. The employer, state, local governments contribute more. And they're going to have to be more conservative in their forecasts. They've been building in these forecasts saying that we're going to be making 8% on our money. No, you're not. You might be making 4 or 5% of your money. But here's my concern, Jeremy. If the pension benefit is less generous, are you going to attract as good a worker? You know, we were talking about teachers, policemen, firemen.
Right.
Are they going to come in and do these jobs? That's the real concern about this whole discussion.
Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot.
The government said this morning the number of people filing first-time applications for unemployment benefits fell last week to 409,000. Economists hope for a number at or below 375,000 to indicate healthy job growth.
And the National Association of Realtors says sales of previously owned homes fell by 0.8% last month.
More numbers inside the numbers section at marketplace.org.
This podcast is supported by Carbonite Pro Online Backup, the automatic backup solution designed for small businesses. Carbonite Pro automatically backs up computer files to a secure location with anytime, anywhere access from any computer or smartphone. Learn more at carbonitepro.com.
Now to the Marketplace global perspective, President Obama delivers a big Middle East speech today. He'll lay out the new U.S. policy toward the changing region and talk about economic help the U.S. can provide to encourage democracy. Our Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale has more.
President Obama will say the Arab Spring is an opportunity to encourage free market economies in the Mideast. The president will propose erasing debts owed the U.S. and increasing reconstruction grants and loan guarantees. Tariq Youssef, the dean of Dubai School of Government, says that's a good investment.
The amounts of funds we're talking about, in my view, are minimal relative to what we could gain in terms of a prosperity and a security and a stability dividend over the long term.
Stronger Arab economies will create customers for U.S. exports, he says. But so far, Western aid to the Mideast has done little to create free markets, says Rutgers professor Toby Jones.
Well, we know that modernization and development aid has not in the past produced democratic outcomes. I mean, it hasn't worked in Egypt, and it certainly hasn't worked elsewhere.
As the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan wind down, Jones recommends using U.S. money instead to create more jobs in Arab countries. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
To Europe now, where the economic power players are speaking out this morning about how important it is to them that the next head of the International Monetary Fund be a European. Dominique Strauss-Kahn resigned yesterday as head of the IMF, though he is denying the sexual assault charges against him.
Now, the leading candidate to succeed Strauss-Kahn appears to be France's finance minister, Christine Lagarde. Though China says the next head of the IMF should be from a developing nation.
Well, the Japanese government reported today its economy shrank by an annual rate of 3.7% in the first 3 months of the year. And while the aftermath of the recent earthquake and tsunami makes up less than a month of the quarter, the natural disasters are playing a huge role in the contraction.
Indeed. And the BBC's Roland Burke is with us from Tokyo with the latest this morning. Hi, Roland.
Hi, Steve.
Obviously, the earthquake wreaked a lot of havoc on the country, but it's been in recession three times now in the past decade. How was the economy doing without the disaster?
Well, it was actually clawing back. It was getting better. But the earthquake and the tsunami destroyed factories. It snapped supply chains. It crippled production in the country. It made consumers, even in places that weren't affected, cut back because they were so shocked by the catastrophe. And in fact, consumer spending fell in March at its steepest rate on record. So it's all added up to Japan having two quarters of declining economy and going back into recession.
Roland, does the Japanese government have the wherewithal to pull itself out of recession? I mean, it's already poured so much money into the economy anyway, right?
Well, certainly it's going to cost a lot to rebuild in the Northeast. That's money that has to be spent. As you say, Japan does already have a massive public debt, but that spending's going to have to happen. That should help the economy to recover towards the end of the year. The problem is going to be over the next few months because the disaster at the Fukushima nuclear plant means there's likely to be electricity shortages over the summer, and that, of course, could hamper production too.
All right, the BBC's Roland Burke joining us from Tokyo. Roland, thanks.
Thanks very much.
In Australia, the tobacco industry is fuming over new proposed rules forcing them to use generic packaging for their cigarette brands. Now the industry is threatening to slash the price of cigarettes to make up for any lost demand. From Sydney, reporter Stuart Cohen has more.
The new law will require all cigarettes to be packaged in the same olive drab colored box, something research has found makes cigarettes unappealing. Gone will be some of the more iconic images companies have relied on to market their products. Instead, most of the pack will carry highly graphic images of diseases caused by smoking. The brand name will be reduced to a small generic font, with nothing to distinguish one brand from another. David Crowe, CEO of British American Tobacco, Australia's biggest cigarette company, has a warning for the government.
And we will obviously focus on pricing, given it's the only thing really left to focus and differentiate brands. More people will smoke. We all know things get cheaper, people buy more, and more kids will smoke. And that is obviously completely opposite to what the government intends.
The industry is also threatening to sue over not being able to use their long-established logos. Australia's health minister says the government is ready to fight. In Sydney, I'm Stuart Cohen for Marketplace.
Well, much has been made over the past few years about President Obama's place of birth. Now the Obama re-election campaign is firing back with a gift for donors of $25 or more. It's a T-shirt, Jeremy, featuring a picture of the president and the words "Made in the USA" in bold print right underneath his big mugshot.
I can't believe they're going after this. Like
they are.
Well,
on the back of the shirt, the long-form Hawaiian birth certificate the White House released a few weeks ago. So and you can buy a coffee mug, too, with a donation of $15. I think it has the same thing, the Made in the USA.
Just go at it head on, I guess.
We've got pictures of both, by the way, at our website, marketplace.org. Natural gas drillers in Pennsylvania's Marcellus Shale region had a deadline to meet today. At the request of state regulators, drillers agreed to find safer ways to dispose of their tainted wastewater. That's something they'd resisted for a long, long time. From the Sustainability Desk, Marketplace's Sarah Gardner reports.
Drilling for natural gas creates a lot of wastewater, and it's full of bromides, salts, in other words. In western Pennsylvania, a lot of the wastewater went to sewage treatment plants that couldn't purify the stuff. Then those plants discharged it into rivers, rivers used for drinking water.
The bromides were reacting with the chlorine in the water treatment process to form a new substance that is carcinogenic.
Environmental advocate Jan Jarrett says for years industry insisted the discharges were safe, but this discovery helped change their tune. Matt Pizzarella is with Range Resources, one of the biggest drillers in the Marcellus Shale. His company lobbied other drillers to stop the practice.
If people don't trust this industry to do the right things, then a number of things will happen. Number one, the regulations will become more strict.
Number two, says Pizzarella, drillers won't get access to gas on private property.
We can only drill for natural gas wells if people choose to enter into agreements with us to allow us to develop their natural gas.
Pizzarella says other industries like coal are also to blame for high bromide levels in Pennsylvania rivers, but intensifying media scrutiny means gas drillers can't afford to play defense all the time. Jan Jarrett says the drillers agreed voluntarily to either recycle their wastewater or send it to deep disposal wells. So Jarrett's motto? Trust but verify.
We are going to be independently pulling records and checking to see whether or not that indeed has happened.
Last week, the Environmental Protection Agency went one step further. It wants to know how and where the biggest drillers will dispose of their wastewater from now on. But for drillers, voluntary is one thing, federal directives are another. An industry spokeswoman said the EPA was overstepping its authority. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Katie Couric will anchor the CBS Evening News tonight for the last time. Couric has been making $15 million a year at CBS, but during her almost five-year run as anchor, she hasn't been able to boost the ratings of the CBS Evening News. So why does CBS think Couric's replacement, Scott Pelley, will do any better? Come to think of it, why are the networks still trying to make money with news programs? Here's reporter Sally Herships.
News is cheap. You don't have to pay actors. You don't have to do sets. You don't have to write scripts.
John Greening teaches advertising at Northwestern University in Chicago. Greening says news is much cheaper to produce than a police drama and still attracts big general audiences. Nielsen Ratings says network news pulls in almost 18 million viewers a night, including deep-pocketed aging baby boomers.
It's part of the reason why when you watch network news, you feel like you've taken a trip to your medicine cabinet.
Greening says a big chunk of evening news ads are for medications. Leonard Lodish teaches marketing at Wharton. He says advertisers choose news because they're hoping some of its respectability and trust will rub off on their products.
The environment that someone sees an ad in can influence their response to the ad.
Greening says even though ratings may be down, ad rates are not. I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
And finally, Steve, to a major recall going on at the superstore chain Meijer. It is calling back a 12-piece tea-light candle set.
Mm.
What could possibly go wrong, you ask?
I don't know. Yeah, candles. I mean, you know.
Well, they come in different colors and scents, including Snappy Spice, Sunny Tuscany, and Sweet Love.
Oh, Sweet Love.
Now, nice. Those names are not the reason for the recall.
I would hope not, yeah.
The reason for the recall is that the candles can pose a fire hazard.
If left, if left unattended, near paper.
Yeah, they might cause a fire. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.